The Team Never Quit podcast is sponsored by Navy Federal Credit Union. Navy Federal Credit Union's cash rewards card will help you slay this season. Learn more at NavyFederal.org.
Team Never Quit Radio.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the TNQ podcast. I'm your host, Marcus Luttrell. Every week, it's my job to fire you up, to ignite the legend inside of you, and to push you to your greatness. Join me every week as I take you into my briefing room with some of the most hard-charging people on the planet. They're going to show you how to embrace the suck of life, teach you the values of working your ass off, and charge through whatever life throws at you. This is the Team Never Quit podcast. So buckle up, Buttercup.
Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of the Team Never Quit podcast. Marcus, John, how you guys doing today?
You know, man, blessed and unstoppable.
Excellent.
Excellent. Excellent. Hey, we start every episode off with a Patreon question of the day. Kind of just gets our gears spinning. It is 10 o'clock on a Monday morning, so sometimes you need that little extra. I've got, this episode is dropping in December, so I've got some kind of holiday questions for you guys. Were you the kind of kid who tried to open your Christmas presents early to see what they were?
Did you do that, Dave?
I was a straight up sneaker around the house, man. I was ninjaing it around. I was searching out the stuff. Like, where could they possibly hide this? You know, what? I was on a mission from a young kid.
Yeah.
And the parents were countering always. So yeah, I was hunting.
I would definitely shake the packages. Like, oh, yeah. Can I hear what it is? Can I guess?
Yeah. You shake things, huh?
Yeah, I was a shaker.
What is that? I never did that. I never did it. I have the greatest video of my daughter. We had Home Alone on the TV, and that jingle was playing.
Yeah.
And literally, I videoed her going through every package, shaking it, kind of twisting it, putting it out. And at the very end, she turned around and saw me. And it's one of my favorite videos. She must have been four. I never did it. I think I was scared to death of my pops. Or finding something in their closet next to the present. Yeah. Yeah. our parents are crazy, man. They had some weird stuff in the closet.
Okay, so that rolls me to the next one. What is your favorite Christmas movies?
Oh, Christmas Vacation. Day one, December 1st, when that rolls in, that's the first thing goes on the television. We have a list now. But that's the go-to right there.
Christmas Vacation is awesome. Yeah. You know, the kids also... I'm a huge Will Ferrell fan. That guy cracks me.
Oh, yeah, Elf. Same thing. Yeah. Elf. That's a mandatory one, too. A Christmas Story is New Year's Eve through Christmas. We don't watch it up, and you have to watch it on that day. We got some weird rules.
Which one? Because isn't there several of them?
The one with Ralphie. There's only one.
Yeah. With the Red Rider.
Red Rider. BB. Thank you. That's why most seals become sealed. Freaking Red Rider.
The lamp.
Yeah. Elf's great. All the Home Alones, and then Die Hard is obviously a Christmas movie. Anybody says not, I mean, it obviously is. So is Lethal Weapon. Thank you. That has Christmas in it.
It does. You're right.
It does. I didn't think about that. I put a lot of thought in this. Yeah. I mean, I have it all written down. We have a different Christmas movie every day. Will Ferrell's the best, man. Like Daddy's Home. Yeah. One and Two. Oh, yeah. That's great, man. So good.
As the kids got older, we introduced the whole, I'm like, look, Die Hard is a Christmas movie. We got to be watching this. So we introduced that right as about the time they hit like 10. I'm like, yeah, you're good.
All right. Okay. You made it.
All right, son, you're almost a man. I want to introduce you to what Christmas is all about.
Oh, man. Well, we've got a great guest in store for you guys. Dave Sears is a United States Navy SEAL veteran with more than 20 years of tactical and strategic experience. He has planned, led, and executed hundreds of special operations missions in more than 40 countries on 5 continents and received numerous awards and decorations for his service in the military. Dave, welcome to the show, man.
Thank you for having me. Really, really an honor.
Yeah, thanks again for doing this, man. It's always a pleasure when we get teammates on just hearing the stories. And now that we back it up, too, the best part is when we start to talk about Bud stories, like, all right, man, you can let it out now, because I failed a lot of stuff going through Buds, and then when I became a team guy, I was like, I never failed to run, I never failed to swim, I was the best in Buds. And this, and then when we get out, every team guy knows that's bullshit, right?
Yeah. Right.
But that's a great thing about Buds. I mean, we're buds.
Yeah, I did the correspondence course. So I wrote in and took my test that way. It seemed to be
online?
Much easier path. Yeah, online.
One of the online frogs. Yeah, I remember when that came online. And then there was that time when they were paying the guys to go back through Hell Week. Or not back through, excuse me. The guys coming up got that bonus if they made it through Hell Week. We didn't get nothing. Kicking the ass.
No, I was, what was I? I was 191. I was, I think, the hardest buds class
ever. Hardest buds class ever. So I've been talking, I've been razzing the new guys about any buds class under 300. So the first 300, we had 300 Spartans, and the first 300 buds class, those were the real hard ones. And then everything after that, I don't even want to hear them talk.
Doesn't even count.
They don't even count. They don't have a cool name like we do.
Yeah, they're doing it on Zoom now.
That's it.
go jump in the cold shower.
Yeah, oh, that's great. All right, shower 20 minutes. Now go out there. Yeah. Go get your kid's sandbox, jump in mom's deep freeze.
That's right. Exactly.
Where were you born?
I was actually born in Chicago, but only lived there for a little bit. Then went to Philly area, and then up to Harrisburg. My dad was a corporate guy, so we moved around like that. But then I ended up like junior high and high school, kind of formative years in Colorado, just south of Denver in the foothills.
Do they have nicknames like military brat, like brats, like a military people move around to corporates? The same thing.
You know, I don't know. I never.
You have a club? No, like, I never like heard the of military one. Brats. So are you brats. City?
What's that?
Then you grew up in the city then?
No. Nope. In Colorado, I was out.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. All right. I was going to ask. Yep. I mean, like when you figured out you wanted to be a frogman, because people ask me that question. Like, is there a difference between you city kids and the country kids and the mountain boys? I'm like, man, we're all in there. There's like smart guys, like real smart guys. We got dumbasses that, you know, become smart. And we got everybody.
No, there's such a good mix. So it wasn't. I mean, I knew even from a young age, I did live in the city when I was in Pennsylvania, in Philly and Harrisburg, but it's the same sort of jungle. So you're running around shooting at each other, but this time you're hopping over fences and roofs and running across tops of garages and stuff and getting in all sorts of trouble. And then when you go to Colorado, I'm more in the woods and we're out like playing paintball and shooting at each other and running around on the golf course and throwing rakes at each other and trying to hide and play capture the flag, you know?
Yeah, those are the guys that make it. Because we did the same thing. I tell people, man, like, if you live in the country, your ass better have a city friend, if you can get one. I mean, at least sometime in your life. Because you can't believe how much fun you can have.
There's different smarts that goes with the city.
Completely. And you're right, it is a jungle. Either a concrete one or we actually... In the concrete jungle, they put the animals in cages and they live around them. Out here... We live with them. I mean, them suckers are running around. So you've got to keep your eyes on them. And survival is kind of tough out here. But it did. I noticed a lot of the skill sets that I picked up as I was growing up running around out in the woods. That helped me going through training and in the teams for sure. For sure.
How old are you? Yeah, it does. And it's good to have that mix. You know, you'll get the guys that are – we had one guy, you know, his nickname was whatever, some animal. But he could – he was a Louisiana dude who could navigate – didn't need a compass for anything. You're like, how the hell? This guy knows where he's going all the time. He's just knew the woods and knew all that. And I had that advantage too. I knew the woods and I kind of had this sense of direction about me that really helped later. And then I had some urban background too. And guys have that. So it takes all kinds and it takes it to come together as that team. You're pulling from everybody's best experiences.
Yeah, that is an absolute true statement. I didn't think about it like that because we talk. We're always talking. So not only do you get their perspective, you get where they come from perspective. It's like boiling down the truth. Like someone would tell me, grew up in the city, he'd tell me something that's true there where he has to grow up. But not fact, but truth, which is kind of – that's a hard discernment. And then when we get in there and we started rolling together and something happened, you get all those different angles for the same problem. And that's when those light bulbs, because you could have one instructor trying to explain something and maybe a couple people get it. And then some people just aren't hearing it. But if everyone's coming in on it, they're like, oh, yeah. Okay, now I see what you're talking about.
No, you're right. Those perspectives are important, right? Think about when we went back to before we had all the nice drones and things like that and shit flying overhead. Well, we used to do these recons.
Oh, yeah.
Where you tried to get a 360-degree view of the target, right? You had to wander around that target and send your little two-man teams out to get all the angles you could. Well, that's the same thing, is you're trying to find the truth of that target and those different perspectives. And when you bring them all together, you get a full picture. Because it is all the truth is, everybody's truth is their truth.
Correct.
The way they see it.
Right.
And the perspective they see it from. So when you bring those together as a team and these diverse backgrounds, you get this really powerful thing.
That's why they had to do what they had to create us to beat the way they beat us down is that humbleness that comes in there to when you're hearing those, because you don't give a damn about anything else. You want to hear them talk because the day sucks so bad. And not only that, you kind of understand their perspective, because they could say something to you and be like, I didn't understand that part of it. How'd you come about that? Right.
Yeah.
And then when you start to see that, it opens it up to where, man, the argument stuff's off. We don't have to deal with that. Man, if I don't understand something you're saying, I don't get pissed off about it. I need to understand why you're saying it.
Yeah, exactly. It needs to all kind of come together. I got into watching this with my son. He started, and my daughter watches it too. You ever watch that show Forged in Fire?
Oh, yeah. Love it.
Okay. So you're taking these different metals, right? When they do this canister thing, they're combining these different steels or different types of metal and putting them together, and they're making these Damascus blades or these different things, but it all has to weld together to make that solid tool. So you're taking all these different parts in the teams, you're breaking them down in buds, and then you're making those welds into one block. And yeah, you can't have those cracks in it. You can't have fissures. It's got to be done just right to get that perfect blade.
Yeah. Just to beat it. That's buds is just when they're beating us. That's the melting, the smell, whatever that thing's called.
Yep.
And then when we get in there, that's the sharpening, dulling, polishing out part.
Exactly. Sure. They're making those welds good so that they get one solid block that then they can shape, and it's going to friggin' last.
I was talking about this the other day so you take the British SAS and you take their outline of what their special forces was and the one that we had and put those together. You can kind of have an idea what it's going to create, but when those things combine together, you don't have any idea what the middle part looks. I mean, there's something about that program when them guys come out. One, the sense of humor is completely changed. Normally, you put somebody through a program like that, they're going to need to shrink for a long time. We don't. We're our own shrink. It's unbelievable, because I try to tell people some of the stuff that they don't see on TV. And no matter how many books are out there and the TVs and the movies and stuff, you know what I'm talking about. There's the other stuff that we have to go through that we don't even bring it up. It's like, that's our privilege of being in the community. And what that freaking creates, you could have never imagined how I think about that. I'm like, how did we even exist? How do we make it through that without not only losing our minds, but we're proficient at what we do?
Right. It is an amazing product. It makes this brotherhood. It makes that solid piece of steel that you have so many bonding experiences, and it is the humor in the misery, right?
Yep.
You're with your teammates, and you learn to embrace the misery and actually love it.
Yeah.
A lot of times you come out on the back end and you're like, that was so fucking miserable.
Dude, miserable.
It was awesome.
It was awesome. It was so awesome. I say that sometimes. People look at me like I'm crazy. I'm like, no, you don't get it, man. But if you understood, like, there are a section of us that are designed for that. They're specifically designed for it, man. And when we get into it, it's like getting fed.
It is. And you'll see guys will cheat. Like, you see this in buds, right? Classes will come together when they're getting hammered the most.
Most, yeah.
And they're really getting it. And they're yelling at it. We had ones in, like, third phase where we did something that pissed off the instructors. We left one of the instructor's surfboards back. We didn't load it on the plane going out to the island.
Yeah.
And oh man, he was hot.
Yeah,
so he had us in surf torturing us in third phase. And people were the whole class just yelling at him, screw you.
Yeah.
We ain't ever going to quit. Go to hell. I mean, pissed.
Yeah.
And bonding.
Dave, how did you get started? Like, tell us about your childhood and why you wanted to get in the teams in the first place.
Yeah, I was always into, I was reading the Mack Boland books growing up and these, stories about Vietnam and stuff. I had an uncle that was in Vietnam, and I was always fascinated with special forces in general. You know, it started with sort of the Green Berets, and then I started reading about the SEALs, and you'd see all these different experiences. I knew I didn't want to be part of the conventional sort of piece and marching with 4,000 other guys to take a hill and just one amongst, thousands. I wanted to be part of something that was more. I was always an independent thinker. So I started pursuing going to the military to help pay for college. So I had an ROTC scholarship, and I had a alternate appointment to the Naval Academy. So I looked at it. Most alternates make it. They flew me out there for a visit, and everybody's in uniform and super military. And I was like, I can't do this. This is too military. This isn't for me. Like, they're all yelling the same things together and they're all sort of marching in mass. I would never survive here. So I went the ROTC route, and initially I didn't have 20/20 vision. So I thought, hey, I can't even go SEAL teams. This sucks. But I'll go EOD or diver, do something, serve my time, all that. And then, as luck would have it, you know, my roommate's stepbrother was a SEAL who had gotten out after 5 years or so and was going to Harvard Med. And he's like, what are you doing? You don't need 20/20 vision. Go into the SEAL teams. I'm like, hell yeah. So now I'm back on that track. And it was just always a natural. I didn't want to be part of the crowd. I wanted to be part of this unit that was special. I wanted to be part of some sort of a brotherhood that was able to make independent decisions, that encouraged creative thinking, that was filled with just other smart people. And I never looked back.
Bless the American people for developing a program for some guy, for guys like us. Because when you kind of go down the checklist of what it is that's in that sucker, every one of them calls to you. It's like, oh, yeah, I'd love to do that. Oh, I really like to do that. And
exactly. It challenges, you know, it's a challenge physical. It's a mental challenge. It's, you're surrounded by incredible people. It's a very rare air to be in. I mean, there's not many people who do it in reality. And you just look at all the, it just fit. Like you said, there's this kind of checklist you're going down going, this fits.
And I'd also say that there was, because there's some things you look at and you're like, oh, I mean, that could be cool. You know, I could check that out. And then there's things where it's like, I have to do that. I mean, that calls to me every piece of that. And that's how I felt about it. The more I read, the more I wanted to read. And I think that what that does is that builds up that excitement, because when we get in there, that's the first thing that leaves. So, I mean, you got to, because that first day, it no matter what you read or what you think, it's like, whoa, it was intense. But I remember having that feeling, though, absolutely 100%.
Were you physically prepared for that? Or like, were you an athletic guy, or do you think you were ready for that?
Yeah, I was, you know, and the guy who helped me out was actually gave really good advice. You know, he talked about the whole never quit. Like, hey, how do I make it through buds? He's like, it's easy. Don't quit.
That's all they'd say.
That's it.
Don't quit. It's easy.
He's like, it's really hard concept to execute, but he's like that's all. That's all the advice I'm going to give you. I'm not going to tell you what goes on there. You won't want to go if you know.
So, okay, hey, that's true. Like, and even if we didn't, like back in the 1900s, we just had like one documentary, The Silent Option, and all those books.
Exactly.
You know, shit, man. You're going to be like, what is this?
You're like, how is this happening?
How is this legal? I mean, I'm pretty sure this is crazy.
Yeah. And so physically, I was a good athlete. I wasn't a stellar athlete, but I played like 3-season sports. So I had, you know, a good background in sports and athleticism. I was strong, but not the strongest. I was fast, but not the fastest. I wasn't breaking any records. I was, you know, even in buds, I was right about top 20-25% or so. I wasn't crushing the record or running 5-minute miles or, you know, benching 300 pounds or swimming Olympic times.
Because we have those guys. They're in there.
They are in there.
They get special attention for sure.
But what he's telling me is that you're physically good enough to do this. It's all mental after that. So you've got enough physical fitness, and a lot of people do. And that's not the deciding factor. The deciding factor is your mental attitude. And are you going to quit or not? I mean, that's it. Bottom line.
I remember one of the instructor Farmer. I'll never forget him. Great guy. Wasn't a big, like, you know, most of our guys walk around, even if they're, doesn't matter, they're up and down. And he could haul, you know, one of those cheetahs we had in the speed runners.
Yep.
They would just, they make the best buds instructors because they just crush everybody. I was like, man, how you run so fast? He's like, man, I don't know, man. I can just run. That was his advice to me.
Just run faster.
And then the other one, they always said, it's easy. Just don't quit. You're like, Okay. Congrats to that.
Yeah, that's their advice. Don't quit. We had one instructor who was really, he later became my troop chief at DevGuru. We went through, became really good friends, did a lot of work together in the later years. And I remember him showing up. He was an instructor there, pretty new. And he came out for the run. He was one of these cheetahs, but he'd come out smoking a cigarette.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Had a cigarette. And he's like, Let's go, gents. Off in boots and soft sand. And he would take off at this clip. And you're like, what the fuck? We'd circle up and he'd grab a cigarette from the van. And he'd be like, hey. And then he'd cheat it back out again. And, you know, years later, I run into him. And he ends up becoming my troop chief at Damneck. And same guy. He's awesome. Yeah. He's just incredible. You know, we did some incredible shit together. And they all want you to succeed is one of the things people don't get either.
Right.
You know, they would prefer to graduate an entire class. Yeah, every single one.
Right. Yeah. True statement.
But they also want to weed out who's not the diamond.
Yeah. It's not the personal, the program's the program. And the blessing is the instructors when they get it, because some of these guys are the most likable, best guys, but they make the biggest asses. I mean, they come up. There are some creative ways to punish a human being, and budget instructors, you're allowed to hone in that.
Yeah, work that skill.
Just to watch that stuff. How could you not go in there and have the best day and laughing just at what the students have to go through? And when you're going through it, I mean, it's misery. It's hell. It is. And the minute you're allowed to turn around and see, it's funny how different that is. I was talking to some guys. I was like, was I a Navy SEAL the day before I got my Trident? And they're like, no, you weren't. Reason being is because everyone else has to acknowledge that. They have to grant us that. No matter how much we train, if you make it to the last day of training and they don't acknowledge the fact that's how you know, then you're not one. And it was... That's the deal, and it's such an empowering thing when somebody recognizes it, because then that confidence sets in. I remember it. That was the one thing I got when they handed me that plumb. That confidence is set inside of me. And I looked down and saw that bird on our chest, because you're not allowed to touch it beforehand. Like the instructors will chase you around, try to pin it on you, and you don't even want to touch that sucker. It's bad, like one of the voodoo on you.
Yeah, and put that on me. When I went through, it was still a different program. They didn't have the. Did you go through the SQT?
I was the last class to have to go through a Trident board. Okay.
So I
had my Trident board, got my Trident, and then my brother was the first class to get theirs out of SQT.
Okay, yep. So that's it's a different system. You go to the team, and you're under like at least a six-month probation.
At least.
Where all your peers, these are all your peers and the people you're going to work with. And it's the same for an officer. All the enlisted are sitting there going, no, we want you to have it or we don't. And so you feel this, you're joining this community and part of, you're accepted into this brotherhood by your peers. And it's not just some metric and you pass some test. They have to give you the sign off and go, you're accepted. Yeah. Now get to work.
Get to work. When they showed up, when that first class showed up with their tridents on their chest, I remember the chiefs took them off and put them we bought a bird cage. Put them in the bird cage and hung it on the ceiling so they could come look at them. And then they would show up the next day and the door would be open on the cage and all the tridents would be out, like stuck in the ceiling. And be like, man, you better go find your bird somewhere. Sucker's flying.
Oh, that's awesome.
Good
that's
times, funny. Man.
So you talked about obviously being physically prepared, essentially. But you talk a lot about the mental toughness aspect. And I feel like a lot of our listeners out there, kind of just the regular guy, struggles with that piece. What kind of advice, you know, could you give to our listeners about that piece of the things, you know, or piece of the puzzle?
You know, I think it's, in my book, I actually write about all the SEAL maxims and the different pieces we've had, and I take them from different perspectives, and never quits one of those, right? So that is about, you know, delaying your immediate gratification and having a long-term intentional sort of goal is what allows you to never quit. And you have this attitude and you go, hey, what is my intention and motivation behind this? What am I doing? And then you have to, depending on the circumstance you're in, scale your future. Meaning at Buds, some guys had to go, you know, hell week, they would go day to day, meal to meal, evolution to evolution, rock to rock, light pole to light pole, push up to push up, whatever it takes, as long as this is adding to your future and where you want to go, you just take that next step to get there. And that's what, take the next step. That's the never quit piece. And as long as it's adding to you, then you're good to go. And but I also talk about the opposite side of this that people need to understand as well. We don't live in a world of absolutes. So there is moving on from something that's detrimental to you. And that's not quitting. So if you're in an abusive relationship, if you're addicted to drugs or something like that, that's okay. Move on from that. That's not quitting. So the difference, how you tell the difference, right? I say it as quitting, you're going to have a regret.
Yeah, you'll know so it. So if you, you'll freaking know it. Right you, then and there, you'll know it.
Yep. When you move on from something, it's a fresh start. You have no regrets. So moving on is if something's damaging you, it's time to cut that away. We've all had toxic people in our lives and different shit. And you're like, I'm not quitting our friendship or I'm not quitting our relationship. I'm moving on. It's not on yeah. me. This is no longer helping me get towards my goals.
Or I graduated or I leveled up or I upgraded. I mean, whatever you need to tell yourself right. to where, like if you were going through school, would you keep going back to school once you got your job and like concentrating on the, no. There's just like with us, we wouldn't keep going back through buds.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. You wouldn't do that. So you have, but that never quit sort of attitude is one step after another. You just keep putting that foot forward as long as it's getting you towards your goal and it's not hurting you. And I'll take some guys and compare it to, you don't want to get into the stupid range of things in terms of like, think about some of the guys that climb Mount Everest, you know, a lot of guys or do mountaineering. They go up there and they make this climb and a lot of guys have been killed because they're never quit attitude. So they're not being smart about this. The weather changes, shit happens in the environment. You got to take that into context and you go, sometimes it's best to go ahead and move back and come back another day, you know, alive. So that's not, it's a really fine line of what's quitting and what's not quitting, but quitting definitely leads to regret because you gave up because it was too hard or too uncomfortable. Moving on, is it was damaging you and not good for you, and you'll have no regrets. So, you know, one step in front of the other is really
how I remember you do it. When we learned, like going through Hell Week, I thought before I was in the teams, I thought if you made it through Hell Week, that was you were a Navy SEAL. Come to find out, that's not even a damn thing, and it's a hard, it's so terrible. And all we got was a damn T-shirt out of it. That's it, a freaking T-shirt, man. And then they're back on you. And the one
and
thing,
right back on you.
Yeah, right back on you. And you're right. The no absolutes, there's only one that I've seen, and it's change. And those cancel yes. each other out, right? So if you don't like the situation, it'll change. If you like it, it'll change. And we didn't – I remember – I don't know when we learned this part, but the only easy day was yesterday. What you truly mean is, like, some people dwell on the past. I'm like
– yes.
Like, years back. I'm like, did y'all – I was like, man, we don't even think about yesterday. It was so damn miserable. I don't want to think about that because you know today's here and it's kicking my nuts. And tomorrow, even though I don't know if I'm going to be here or it's going to be here, it's probably going to be something I got to deal with, not the back end. And we got really good at eliminating that.
Yeah, you do. And that's I think that's how you come out of this sane.
Yeah.
Is you cannot – so you equate – the only easy day was yesterday. I equate it to you don't drive your car looking in the rearview mirror. You know, you glance in that thing
yeah.
for some reference and some learning, but it's the road ahead. 95% of your time is spent looking at that road ahead and dealing with that. And that whatever was in that road behind you doesn't guarantee if that road was straight or if it was curved has no bearing on what the road in front of you is going to be. So now you got to navigate it, right? And you have this future mindset instead of this past mindset. And that's what people wallow in this stuff where they think, they often think, you know, one of the psychological things is that we think that our current state, just like you said, Marcus, is change is the only constant. And so the state you're in is going to change. The freezing cold that you're in surf torture, it's going to change. It's going to get better. it's going to change again and you're going to be back in it. Where you're at now is not where you're going to be forever. So it will change. Keep moving forward and it'll change.
I remember how much we learned to appreciate the good times because when the hard ones showed up. But then they also taught us to have a good time in those because then we get to activate with each other.
That's right.
And it wasn't work to us. And this only applies to other team guys, man. But like when we're out there and like one of our buddies is really suffering, we're there suffering with them, but they make the best faces and they say the most miraculous things when the stress is on us.
Yeah.
That's kind of why we sit in it, just to hear those stories. And like, man, guys will complain in the funniest way. And then when we have to go actually do something, your mind completely turns off of it. And we shift back and then we get back home. And it's like, yeah, it was all worth it. But I remember when they taught us to every time an evolution, we would fail something or guys would die and they would bring them back like in the pool. They're like, hey, you want to quit? You're like, no, I don't want to quit. And they throw them back in there. Suckers are drowned again. Pull them back out. Yeah. Hey, you want to quit? Up until the point where if someone tells us you need to quit something, we turn them off. You can tell me to shift to something else. But if you put something in front of me and you activate me on it and then tell me to quit it, that's a problem. And I didn't I didn't pick that up with us until later in life.
No, and yeah, it is. It's the dog on the scent.
Yep.
That they turn you on to that and they're just really bringing that out in people. That exists in every guy who made it through Bud. So all they're doing is honing it and bringing it out in you. Because if you don't have that internally, no one can give it to you.
Right.
So we're just going to hone it and kind of bring it out and make sure that it's at the forefront of your mind. That, you know, you can read amazing stories of adventures around the world or SEALs or other special forces or war. The common thing on all those stories, you never hear the stories about the people who quit. There's not like some fabulous story about some, amazing battle or whatever it was that everybody just laid down and quit. Those people get forgotten and they don't make the stories, right? It's in those situations. I remember one I had, we were doing this ship attack. So we were supposed to be diving in and come into the ship and all meet, climb the ship and then, take down the ship, right? And we come in and we drop our draggers under the thing and my partner and I start swimming under the pier to go link up with everybody else. And I dove under one of those trellises, Now I don't have my kit on anymore or anything like that. I just kind of was sinking under. It was like 2 feet underwater. And I go dive down and go under this thing. And I start to come up and I'm caught. Something on my kit had caught on that. And I'm like a foot below the surface of the water. And I'm struggling. I'm pushing back down. I'm pushing back up. And I'm getting to the point where, the gulping thing we do.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So I'm out of air. I'm trying to trick myself now and start gulping and sit there and go, I can't believe this. I'm going to fucking die a foot. I can see like the surface.
Yeah.
So you have a choice. You're like, am I just going to sit here and do it? Or am I going to fight with every last piece and not quit? So I kind of calmed down and then tried more things, kept gulping, pushing, shoving. I was going to break that trellis if I had to.
Yeah.
And eventually it lets loose and up I come. I pop up. There's my swim buddy. Hey, what the fuck were you doing, dude? Let's go.
Yeah, that's the best part.
Where was I? What do you think I was doing? That's a real thing. Something looking for lobsters?
Yeah, he's like, what the fuck are you doing making all that noise? Quit fucking around. Excuse my language. I'm sorry, man. But that, he's like, man, I was dying. I almost died. I did die. I was drowning. I was trying to, because you don't care if you get busted. It's almost like, game off. And then your swim buddy rolls up. He's like, man, you're making too much noise. Be quiet. You're like, I'm dying. Man, don't even care, dude. And I mean, that's the funniest. I don't know what that is and how, because most people be like, man, are you all right? Let's get a hug in there. And they're like, quit messing around. Let's go.
Yeah,
no, it's brilliant. It's so brilliant.
It's a different way that you look at life brilliant. And that misery and the shared piece of it. And you know what you recognize too, a very unique thing, I think, to the teams is, well, not, it's probably not just unique to the teams, but you really learn to recognize the difference between complaining and bitching.
Oh, yeah. Those are different.
Very different things. Very so different. That humor, all that stuff, when that guy's miserable and he's just bitching to vent and he's being humorous, but he's not complaining and wallowing in his own misery. So nobody wallows in their own misery. Guys won't tolerate that. They bring you out of it, but you can be funny as shit bitching during stuff.
Oh, and those are the best. They say a bitching sailor is a happy sailor. So when you start hearing somebody complain, listen, because the comedy that rolls out of that is amazing. And the funniest thing about his story is, if you know, if there's a enlisted guys behind him, he's like, look, the boss is drowning up there.
How much longer
are you thinking on? Oh, man. Dude.
Should we get him? No. Let's see.
No.
He's got it.
Let's see how he does this. Or you're hypothermic or whatever. I had that same.
Because you know it's miserable, right? Yeah, it had to be. That's the only time engaging is when
that
it sucks.
Same one, that same op, dude. It was I had slept in poison ivy like the night before.
Oh, man.
So I was like, fuck this. I'm not wearing a wetsuit. I'm not just going to trap that stuff in there. It's only going to be a short dive.
Oh, dude.
I'll just skin it and I'll get, the salt water on. It'll be good. What was going to be a 20-minute dive turned into an hour. I'm like friggin' hypothermic, shaking, still doing all this stuff. I can't stop shaking. I got to climb this ladder. And dude's looking at me like, dude, stop shaking, man. You're not going to be able to shoot anyway. Like, stop shaking. Fucking my core temp's like friggin' 90.
That's another thing you can't explain how that feels. Like because then when you really get cold and miserable, and then every little thing and it's the little things that go wrong that really upset us, like that kind of stuff. It's not what you would think. It's not that big stuff that people would normally freak out about. It's the little poking on the back, kind of that.
Yep. Yeah, it does. Exactly. And you're right. You can't explain it. And you can't, it's very difficult to explain the cold to people.
Right.
To explain especially, I see people who do the cold tubs and shit like that.
Yeah.
You're like, that's cool. You get a sense for it, but that's voluntary.
Right. It's also doing something different to you because the whole concept is different.
Yeah. You're now imagine getting in that tub and you don't know when you're going to get out and they're not going to let you out. Or once you get out, you're going to go do some other activity and do this and you have no time frame on it. You don't know. That's one of the things you do. I think one of the brilliances of Buds and the initial formation of us is not knowing what that future is, not knowing when you're going to get out of that water.
Absolutely.
So that you're ready to deal with adversity till whenever, and you're ready to deal with this change that's going to happen. If I give you a timer and go, hey, we're going to do surf torture for the next 10 minutes. Well, that's different than we're going to do surf torture till somebody quits or I get tired.
Yeah. And it's called surf torture. So you're like, you're going in, your mindset's already around the fact that you're getting tortured. It's set up that way. If they told you, it's like, hey, we're putting you in the cold tub because I love you. I don't want your muscles to be sore for 10 minutes. Go. I mean, that wouldn't even be a thing for us.
Exactly.
But the way they get into our heads already and they push us into that state. Absolutely.
And throw you a constant curve. They make sure that you can't win. So when you think you can't, they'll give you wins because we go back to kind of it pays to be a winner, right? We want to teach you that all you want to do is strive to be a winner. And then when that's all we're teaching you, we're going to make sure that you fail.
Yeah. Yeah.
So then you got to pick yourself up from that. You can do every single thing right. And we saw guys, I'm sure you saw this, guys would get so frustrated and you're going, what are you doing? The game's rigged. Don't be frustrated. This is
the best.
Roll with the punches. And the guys who couldn't, they quit.
Yeah.
We did everything right. They asked, we showed up on time and they still sent us to the surf. And you're like, Dave, this is how it works.
If one of the crew started winning so much, like to prove themselves, then they would start losing more. Instructors would make it that way just because you're trying to outdo your team.
Yep.
That's what that teaches. They don't tell you that.
Yeah. But
they say it pays to be a damn winner. And like you stay up all night polishing that floor, and they walk in with some sand with a hole in the pocket and look at this sand right here. What's that all about? People would lose their minds.
Yeah.
And it's designed for that specific reason. It's like somebody whoever put that win loss in your mind,
That was the problem, that expectation. So when they, and that's another thing you said, I didn't think about that either. When they take the future away from you, like it's only the now, like I don't have time to think about it. I, like you're constantly, I don't even know if I'm gonna make it past this, that thing, everything changes. When you're just focusing on the now.
And that's your time frame for the never quit idea is when it gets that adverse, you do need to revert to that present, get through that present. And your future, though, you can look way out and go, I'm getting through buds. So that's where I'm going. So right now I'm going to deal with the now, get through that to have this future later. But be in that present. We got one. There was a what were they on? Tuesday, the inspections, the room inspection shit. Was it
depending on the phase, but mostly is that Monday, then Tuesday kind of time to run.
Yeah, I don't know if they changed it. It did whatever. So, you know, everybody used to go take their uniforms. They go to this, what was it? Their AB Brights? Bright or whatever.
AB Brights? Yeah. The van. That's right. AB Brights, I think.
Yep, AB Bright. They go get them all starched. You get your uniform all starched and shit.
You could shave with that sunbitch, nice. Dude. Look like paper when it came out of there.
Yep. And sure as shit, you're going to hit the surf every time. So, week three, I'm like, I'm not doing this. You know what? I'm going to starch my uniform at home. I'm not going to spend another $20. I could spend that on beer. So I'm going to go iron my uniform, hit it with starch. It looked great. So I do it in my room. I sit there and I starch that thing. It looks awesome in my room, right? Looks good. I show up in formation and I'm standing in front and I look like a bag of shit.
Right.
The instructors all look at it. Every single dudes are pissed. They're looking at me like, holy crap. Now the enlisted guys are like, this is going to be funny as hell. And all the other officers are lined up and they're all starched up and they're like, dude, you're going to get us hammered. I'm like, we're going to get hammered anyway. Who gives a shit? But I had 20 extra bucks in my pocket and didn't have to run AB Brights. The instructor looks at it and he's like, which one of these kids doesn't look like the other? And everybody's like, drinking Sears, what the hell? And so they go, he is the only smart one in the group. Why are you dumbasses still spending money at AB Bright?
Yeah.
Everybody but him hit the surf.
Right.
So in one way I won. In the other way, they just made me this whole, now I'm the focus of attention.
That's how I do it. They'll pitch your class off at you.
Right.
That's brilliant. Yeah. We had one of
And then after that, AB Bright was done though. Yeah. Guys started doing their own thing. Like, okay, you guys are finally wise enough.
If we had some guys that weren't ready for inspection in the uniform, as soon as the instructors came rolling up, the OIC would be like, Roger that, hoo-yah! And then we'd go to the surf on our own and screw up the uniforms and be standing like, why did y'all, we didn't even do the inspection. We're like, oh, I thought one of the instructors said hit the surf. You know, but they're going to beat you anyways.
Yeah. They're going to beat you anyway. They're going to beat you anyway. It doesn't matter what you do.
They're going to beat you.
And when you accept that, then it's easy to get through. I've probably gotten more trouble in buds for laughing stuff the instructor said, things that went on. Then that is the other thing that you will find through nearly, I'll say 99% of team guys is they have an amazing sense of humor. It is in the darkest situations, in the worst times, they have an incredible sense of humor. And you see it time and again, and that helps you get through things.
Yeah.
It's life, man. You're not going to get out of it alive. Don't take it too serious, but serious enough.
Right. And every now and again, it'll come out. You can tell we have it when it comes out at a different spot around people who aren't used to it. This one girl was telling me about a story about her grandmother. She was flying a plane. She was almost 90 years old, and she crashed into a lake. And she was telling a story. And I was like, that's awesome. You know, I didn't know. I was like, man, are you kidding me? Your grandmother, the story about your grandmother, she flew a plane into a lake. You know, she was partying down like 90 years old. I was like, why don't you look at that as a bad thing? Yeah. You'll remember that forever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And she's like, I never thought about it like that. I'm like, well, you should, because life is the way you said it is. And if you don't treat it like that, man, it can make it miserable.
Yeah, exactly. You don't wallow in it. You know, you find the humor in it, and that helps you cope and move on through stuff. And it's,
I think the diversity, the diversity in our community it teaches us about our sense of humor. Cause I say that too. People are like, hey, why do some guys make it and some guys don't? And every team guy will have a different answer. But if you dig deep enough, we all get to the humor part. It usually comes up in the conversations, like, you know, and then the humor is kind of, we kind of glaze over it, but I think it's one of the most important ones. It's like, if you've got a sense of humor, they can change. And I mean,
in the beginning, it's nowhere near what we've evolved into because it has to happen in the program. But if you know you can have that ability, then you probably do well.
Yeah, and you get some of the guys that are – you will have some guys that are too serious. They don't have that sense of humor. And you see guys ping away. The other thing that we do is we find each other's weak spots and we ping at that chink in the armor until it's no longer a chink in the armor.
It's not even there. Yeah.
So, I mean, it's the whole – And you get the guys. It's back to what was the movie? Stripes, Lighten Up Francis.
Yeah, Lighten Up Francis.
You know? So as soon as you're Lighten Up Francis, and he will ping away at those chinks until they either forge their armor tight or they go away. Yep. You know, and they don't have any holes in that armor.
Because if we're not messing with you, it's a problem. Role in that. Yeah, if you're not getting messed with, that's the problem for sure. Because that's how we do it.
Yeah, I always feel that around here.
I try to tell him that.
Shows you love.
Yeah, I get the poke often.
Yeah.
Tell us about the book. Why Smarter, Not Harder?
Yeah. So I started doing this business with a good friend of mine. He's a retired Marine. And what we wanted to do was teach people how to think about complex problems and how to take these approaches to complex problems and the different sort of nonlinear thinking tools that went behind that. And I was looking for a mechanism to kind of communicate some of these that had some standing behind it. So I took all these maxims that we say, these sayings that we have in the SEAL teams, and I just went through them and I reflected on them. And they kind of, a lot of them are like, you know, have you ever heard of the smokers who try to quit and they wear like a rubber band around their wrist, yeah. You know, a quick little reminder. Well, these things we go back to and you'll hear them through your community all the time. So I'm like, what do these mean to me? How did they apply to me in the SEAL teams? And then how can they apply to people in their lives and in business? And what can you get from the unique things we've been able to learn and take that and apply it to everyday people that are going about their lives, you know, whatever it is, you know, corporate people, husbands, wives, students, kids. I mean, I've had kids read the book and they can pull away from it. So the idea is to kind of communicate some of these concepts and what they mean, like in a double meaning. And look deeper behind them. Like one I talk about is one that I go counter to is pain is weakness leaving the body. You know, we hear this all the time.
Yeah.
That's the one that I say is total bullshit. And it's a terrible saying. Pain is pain. It's the alarm lights in your airplane going off or the check engine light in your car. You need to pay attention to that and do something about it, not just continue to fly or do whatever. But there's a difference between discomfort, uncomfortable, and pain, and learning how to tell that difference and when to pull back. And especially, and you know, some of it was me also, like in that one, talking to the community about the mental piece of things. Because there's a time when you're broken mentally, whether it's from PTSD or TBIs, you know, an actual physical type injury, that you need to recognize that's alarm bells going off. And you need to do something about it, not ignore it. So I take all these different ones, the smarter, not harder. I mean, the way the book's titled, that I'll put a caveat in there. And I say it in the beginning of the book is that harder is a prerequisite. Being hard and hard work is a prerequisite. That's assumed already. That's necessary. What's going to differentiate you? Because there's a lot of people working hard. What differentiates you is being smarter about how you work and how you go about things. And so reflecting on your own thinking, kind of how do you look at problems in sort of a nonlinear way and non-absolutes. We get so many of these absolutes are out there, but the world's gray. And so I just go through each one of these kind of sayings that we have and associate them first through a team guy story and then associate them to this is how this applies to you in business and life. And it was just, it was something that I thought I could kind of put out there. There's no algorithm. There's no checklist. There's no steps to success. It's just to pique people's curiosity and get them started thinking a little bit differently.
No, it's brilliant. It truly is. I mean, I once the kids got on the ground and I started having to read the nursery rhymes. Some of those have been around forever. And even if they come in different languages or the story might change, the main idea behind it's the same. And I kind of chased after wisdom my whole life. And when you run into her, you know, when the silver hairs, when you're like, hey, that's the wisdom, it's usually short. It's real short and to the point. Yep. And like you were saying, if you have the only easy day was yesterday, that title's there. But if you had every team guy write what that meant to them underneath that, it would all be different. But the same. It would all be different, but the same. It's kind of like looking at something, seeing something, and watching something. Those are the same, but they're also very, very different. And you're right. Pain is weakness leaving the body. But pain will leave your body when it's done with you, not before or after. And as when we were coming up, I tried to teach my kid this when he got bloodied up.
Right.
And then I got bloodied up after him, the same deal. He's like, Dad, how come you don't cry when you get hurt like that? I was like, well, I used to cry. But then I noticed that pain was that pain with that wound and what it did. And it's kind of like when I'm driving down the road, when the dashboard lights come on, I know what it means, but I know I can keep going.
Right.
And so it's like our pain threshold, as with life, kind of ticks upward. If you want,
you're absolutely right. It does.
It kind of ticks upward with you, man. Because if you were if your pain tolerance was that of a toddler, you'd be in trouble. Because I don't care how old you are, if you get into a situation for the first time, you'll react like a child.
Yeah, you are. And that's the other power of the teams, right? We're trying to situations as we can so that you're not surprised by them and you don't act like it's a new situation. That's our training and everything else is hundreds of iterations of doing something to create these mental models in your head that allow you, when you're in it, you're not fully surprised and you're able to, you're able to respond rather than react.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, yes, if absolutely. You're doing
because those are different. Those are huge difference too.
Huge difference, right? If I'm boxing with somebody, I want to throw a fake to get you to react so that I can make my next move.
Yeah.
If you're good and you're like, you know, I know maybe I'd be boxing with the guy and I know I throw like a jab and he slips in and under it. I'm like, okay, this dude's not. That's not a reaction. That's a response.
Right.
And he knows what he's doing.
Right.
Okay. We're in for a little something here. So there's a whole, it's that attitude that you're trying to do. And the way we do it and the way that you teach your kids and the way that we learn and we constantly seek wisdom is through storytelling.
Yep. 100%. I truly believe that.
We tell stories that connects to people's brains. That sets off dopamine centers. That allows you to remember. If I just give you a PowerPoint with all the bullets of wisdom, you're like, what? You're not going to retain that shit. But the stories that the seals before us told to us, that our peers told around us, the stories start to give you the wisdom and they convey lessons that you remember and you can internalize. And those stories are one perspective.
Yeah.
Of course.
And I can always see them all together. You can see them in it. That was the thing, is when they were explaining it, you could kind of visualize them in it. And then yourself with them in it, and it helps perpetuate. That was the best lessons, is when those old timers be like, all right, I got a story to go with that. You want to hear it?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I was like, yeah, I want to hear it.
Everybody perked up and listened, right? Then they were really learning.
Yeah, because they were talking to you to help you. It's almost as if, I was talking about this the other day, I could tell my kid to do something. He looks at me like I'm just like, what? And then you could be standing there right beside him and telling the same damn thing, and it's like, Roger that. You know what? That was great. that's the universe and her ultimate wisdom. I think they put that barrier up, but.
Oh, they do. And that's like, people will ask me, you know, what's the hardest thing you've ever done or had to do? And I'm like, I tell you, I think the most challenging, hardest thing is being a parent trying to raise adults.
Yeah.
And you are thrown for shit. Dude, my heart rate, like I jump out of the plane in the middle of the night, 10,000 feet, and my stupid, you know, I have a malfunction, cutaway, and my heart rate doesn't go up. You know, my kid runs out like towards the middle of the street when they're younger. My heart rate like rockets up to friggin' 160. I'm like, holy shit, what are you doing?
What is that? I know it. Same thing. After everything that we've been through, I'll be sitting on the couch and hear them smart off to their mom, be like,
exactly what?
Yeah. It's different lessons, different training.
It's an unbelievable challenge, and it's but one of it's very similar to the teams in that the highs are super high.
Yep.
And the lows can be super low too. And so you find humor in it and you keep moving on and you navigate it. You don't control it, you know, and what's in the rear, like how many, I'm sure as you get up there parenting, same as me, I would venture to say same as every parent, you have some things you've done that you look back and go, well, I fucked that up.
Yeah, of course.
Right?
Are you kidding me? We do that in the teams every day. I'm definitely going to do it as a parent.
Exactly. So that's all in the rearview mirror, though. Then you learn from that and you keep going. If you dwelled on that with your kids, you'd be like insane.
Oh, yeah.
You'd be losing your mind. You're like, eh, sorry about that.
It'd make them miserable, too. I mean, I couldn't even, that'd be the.
That's right. Because you're also setting an example for them. You know, you're. They're modeling
what they see, what they do,
what
yeah.
you do. And that's important. That's what we try to do in the teams too. You modeled the behavior that you wanted the new guys to have. And then all your peers, you all modeled each other's behavior. Hey, here's some of the general core values that we have. We expect you to have integrity.
Yeah.
Meaning that you're going to be consistent in your deeds and actions, right? Or your deeds and your words are going to be consistent.
Yeah.
So that if you say something, your words, your bond, we expect that, right? We expect you to be there. We expect you to be there for your brother and we expect you to never quit.
Yeah.
And so you have these core values and you model those and you show that.
Yeah.
And there's things that I saw, like, I think one of the things that team guys loathe the most is hypocrisy. They cannot stand it.
No, that's a game changer right there, man.
Yep. And you see it in today's society and everything else. And guys, it is the biggest thing. And team guys have an incredible bullshit detector and a nose for hypocrisy. And they won't always call it out, but they'll just go,
oh, you'll know.
Okay, noted.
Yeah,
got it. Exactly. I see where you stand.
Yeah.
You're full of shit.
That's one of those that gets thrown in there that it's real tough to. Oh, yeah. Especially with us,
you
man.
Know, you lose your
dude.
You lose your honor and you lose your credibility if you engage in that stuff. And we see that in the higher leadership a lot, and it's a problem.
Yeah,
Dave, I'm going to put you on the spot, man. You got to leave us with a piece of never quit advice, maybe from your book, maybe from life. What piece of never quit advice do you have for the listeners?
Yeah, like I said, the control what you can control. You know, influence what you can influence, and then you navigate the rest and you keep moving forward. Future oriented mindset. And whether that time scale for you is 1 foot in front of the other, or it's week to week or month to month, keep moving forward. You can change things. Things will change. So you just got to keep on keeping on.
That's it.
Man, that was awesome.
I know it was good. Thanks, brother, man, for doing that.
How can people get your book? How can people support you?
Yeah, then go to dcsears.com. And from there, they'll see my business and they'll see the book and the links to it. It's on Amazon and, you know, Barnes & Noble and all that jazz. I actually just started, you know, one of these things is I grow or not. I just started an Instagram account. I've been resisting this, you know, social media thing. So they can find me on Instagram. You probably double my followers from like 10 to 20.
We will. Yeah, we'll help you out with that. We're going to find a couple.
What's your Instagram we'll username?
DC Sears.
All right. You at least got 2 followers in the room. So you.
There you go.
We already got you a 10%
increase.
You're
stuck with me, bro. We're teammates. I can't get away from you.
Then I guess I got to post stuff to it, right?
That's right.
So is that how that works?
How it works, my friend.
So we'll figure that out, you know, teaching old dog new tricks.
That's awesome. Hey, man, well, thanks for being on. We love sharing these stories. Man, just taking the time. We appreciate it.
Yeah, I really appreciate you guys having me. It's good to see you and connect.
Thanks, guys, for listening to another episode of the Team Never Quit podcast. Make sure you share an episode with a friend. Leave us a review. Let us know what you think. You can always visit us on the website, teamneverquit.com. You can get your merch. You can join our online community, our Patreons. You can follow us on social media and all that good stuff. We will see you guys next week.